and barrel racing, all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, tiny-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
The PA Horse Breeders Association introduces the Pennsylvania Stallion Series. Four brand new races to be run at Parks for PA-sired, PA-bred two-year-olds. There are two $100,000 contests on August 22nd, PA Day at the Races. September 24th, PA Derby Day, has two more races, each with a $200,000 purse. The PA Stallion Series, yet another reason why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race. For more, please visit PABred.com.
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough!
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. It's hour two, about 5 minutes in. Andy Beyer is going to join us, and Andy was delighted when he reached out and said, you know, there's a significant milestone, 50th anniversary, 50 years ago today kind of thing coming up, Secretariat. And he was there, and he's got some thoughts. So Casey reaching for Andy now, and if you didn't see what I put up on the Twitter, I went poking around. It's interesting. It's so hit or miss with video and, you know, YouTube stuff. Naira has the complete race up on mounted, but without the call. And then there's what looks like a featurette that has Al Scotti talking about Linda's Chief. Essentially, and then you also hear Dave Johnson in the background and his call, but just the stretch, pick it up at the stretch. So it's a little, it's so crazy. I mean, there's certain races that you'd love to see, and they just, you know, they're sometimes they're there, sometimes they're not. It's very strange. Andy Beyer is joining us, and Andy, I just telling everybody how this conversation generated, and I was so happy that you called with an inquiry about taking us back 50 years.
Well, when I noticed that this anniversary was looming a couple months ago, I circled it on my calendar. You know, it was, you know, it was one of the most memorable days of my life at a racetrack as like a fan or a reporter. I mean, leaving aside the gambling activity, you know, one of the things that makes Saratoga so special is its historic emphasis on two-year-old racing. I mean, when you look at the record books at, you know, races like the Hopeful or the Sanford, I mean, they're the kind of the greatest names in racing history, and so many of them had their coming out party at Saratoga. I mean, going back like more than 100 years. I mean, Man of War memorably lost the Sanford. I mean, you know, Regret won three races against 2-year-old colts at Saratoga in 1914. I'm sure there was some wise guy in the stand saying, you know, she's good enough to beat the boys in the Kentucky Derby. You know, whirl away, Native Dancer. They were all there. And you know, as a fan and a horse player, you get a great deal of satisfaction out of seeing and spotting these horses, and identifying ones who are really going to go on to greater things. And probably in 1972, I was working at the Washington Star before moving to the Post, and after the Sanford This Day, I wrote a story that began, racing fans at Saratoga have reason to believe they saw the 1973 Kentucky Derby winner. We all want to be right. You know, you want to say this horse looks like a champion, but on August 16th, 1972, if you were really, really smart, I mean, you might have said this could be the greatest horse who ever lived. That was how momentous I think many people who watched the Sanford and watched Secretariat felt. The horse showed how great he was, and all I can say is I'm pleased that I'm still breathing 50 years later and could talk about it, and you know that I still have enough functioning brain cells to remember some of the details of that day in race. At the time, as you mentioned earlier, the preeminent 2-year-old was Linda's Chief, who had won all 5 of his starts. I mean, in the spring he'd run 6 furlongs at 109 flat at Aqueduct. He was really good. And when you look retroactively at his career record, you realize how he was really good. I mean, as a 3-year-old, he beat Forgo, the 5-time Horse of the Year. He went out to California and he beat Ancient Title 3 times, and Ancient Title wound up in the Racing Hall of Fame. That's why, Lindy's Chief was kind of, I would say, justifiably favored, in the meeting against Secretariat. Secretariat had lost as the debut after having trouble at the start, then won a maiden race, and then won an allowance race by a length and a half. So it wasn't, his record wasn't all that glittering. But I had, this was about the time I started working with Speed Figures. I developed my methodology beginning in 1971, and it took about 4 years to get it all right. So that the figures I was making in 1972 were really primitive, and you couldn't compare them with our scale of numbers today. So I can't say that Secretariat ran this or Linda's Chief ran that. I mean, I wish I had two numbers for all the greats of the 1970s, but unfortunately I don't. But I do know that Secretariat's allowance win was a big figure, and I liked him that day. He had run on the day of the Test Stakes, which then and now is one of the big races in the country for 3-year-old fillies. And the winner of the race that day was Number to Count, who had been the much acclaimed filly champion of the previous year. She was, a Phipps color bearer, and she was just a terrific filly. Well, on that day, although they ran at somewhat different distances, Secretariat's buyer Speed Figure was 2 points higher than numbered accounts. So you, when you've got a young 2-year-old running faster, than an acclaimed champion, he's pretty good. So this was a great showdown, between two exceptional horses, and the race itself just couldn't have been more dramatic. It was just a field of five, and Secretariat characteristically broke kind of slow and took time to get into stride. Meanwhile, Lindis, there were a couple long shots in the in the field, and Lindis Chief was stalking them. And as the field came to the turn, the leaders were, or let's say, came to the turn and then turned into the stretch. There were three horses across the track. The inside, one was on the rail, one was what we would call, I guess, the two path, or maybe the two and a half path, like there was a little more than a horse width between them. And then to the outside of them, Linda's Chief was launching his move. Well, as Secretariat, moved up, I mean, it looked like there were, he was going to have nowhere to go, and he found room between the two horses on the inside, and he didn't, and he didn't bowl through them. He just, if you watch the film, it just seemed like he did it kind of gracefully and professionally, but it was not like he was knocking them over. But there, there was very little room, and he was so emphatic that a journalist, I believe it was, the great Charles Hatton, who wrote that when Secretariat made this move, it was like a fox scattering a barnyard of chickens. when he was in the clear, he just exploded. Al Scotty, who was the trainer of Linda's Chief, and knew how good Linda's Chief was. I mean, he was just kind of speechless. He said of Secretariat, he said he ran away from me like I wasn't even there, and he won by 3 lengths, and it was such an emphatic victory that I recall that that people around the track really to in great numbers grasped that they had seen something really, really exceptional, and I had two contemporaries who were friends that I'd made around this time period at the racetrack. My racetrack mentor, the late Steve Davidowitz, and the journalist Bill Knack, who would be a friend of mine for decades until his death not too long ago. And both of them were just agog. I mean, Steve, had made a habit of studying, 2-year-old form. I mean, he always said that, that his favorite race in the world was the Hopeful Stakes at Saratoga, and he'd never seen anything like this. I mean, Bill was so taken by this that I guess you would say it changed the course of his life. Mm. He started going back to the barn to see Lucian Lauren and talking about Secretariat and writing news stories, and that was and he he never stopped reporting on Secretariat. I mean, his biography of Secretariat is a classic. It was the basis of the of the movie Secretariat. It had an impact on people. And Bill talked a lot to Charles Hatton, who was the eminent racing columnist of the day for the Racing Form.
Of course,
just a really erudite man, and he'd seen everything, and I was looking back in Bill's book yesterday, and he Bill befriended. I mean, Hatton was kind of seemingly unapproachable guy, but Bill made friends readily, and he befriended him and talked to him about Secretariat. And Hatton, he quoted Hatton saying this. He said, "I've made a thing of looking at horses since before the First World War." And he said, "And when I saw Secretariat, I couldn't believe my eyes. I thought, this is it. I've never seen perfection before." And this was no half baked guy, just popping off. I mean, this was the most, one of the most knowledgeable people, who's ever been in the game. And so that's why the Sanford was so big. It wasn't just merely his first stakes win. I mean, this was the race that, showed, how great a racehorse he was, and he would, of course, go on to verify that judgment.
There's several things here, Andy, to kind of feather into it. You were on site for the season. You came for the weekend.
The first couple of years I went there, I went intending to spend the entire season, but went broke early and wound up coming back on the Adirondack Trailways bus. I mean, I was it took a little while to get the speed figures honed to perfection, and then by the mid 70s I would go and stay for the whole meeting, but I had a few early humiliations at the spa.
Well, and who hasn't? You mentioned, I thought, the very germane portion of this, as part of the season, the championship campaign, because Loren was very patient in terms of running him in the sprints all the way through the Futurity in September. He debuted at 5.5, then 6.6.6, 2 6.5s before the Champagne.
Remember, horses had much longer careers in those days. They started, they started racing earlier, for a horse to run 10 or 15 times at a 2-year-old, as a 2-year-old was nothing unusual. So that if you had that kind of that kind of campaign as a possibility, there was kind of no need to rush them into root races. So he, there were a lot of opportunities for 2-year-olds, and I don't think it was so much a reluctance to, or a hesitance to get him into longer races. It's just that's how the game was played in those days.
The win, and I just put up the link for everybody in terms of seeing it, seeing that replay with Al Scotti's comments, and you can hear the astonishment really in his voice. The tag says Scott, but it's Al Scotti talking about Linda's Chief, and then goes on, of course, to win the hopeful by five, the futurity by a length and three quarters over Stop the Music. Then comes the DQ in the champagne, but basically comes back and closes out the year with the Laurel Futurity and the Garden State, which at that time was the richest two-year-old race, I think, in the country.
That's right. That's right. He certainly did. You know, Lauren was under a certain amount of, well, a lot of pressure, just because there was a big syndicate money, in Secretariat, and a demanding owner, and and Penny Tweedy, and he didn't want to be hasty, but he certainly wasn't overly cautious, and he picked the big, prestigious, lucrative spots, and took the classic route to the Triple Crown. So I think it was pretty much by the book.
How, Andy, in regards to what he accomplishes, and in terms of being a horse of the year at the age of two, and I'd have to look, I guess, at Champions to go back. I mean, who had been a previous horse of the year as a two-year-old?
Wow.
Right? That's a...
I would have to go back to the history books. I don't know if there has been one.
I'm just looking at Champions. I guess we could count Moccasin, right? Moccasin was the TRA's horse of the year in 65.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, with Roman Brother as the consensus, and then of course Kelso had won. You know, started the decade with five straight. That not going to be too many interlopers on that. In the 50s, Sword Dancer, Roundtable, Bold Ruler, Swaps, Nashua. No, few and far between. Native Dancer, even Nashua. Yeah, Nashua with the two doesn't count. Tom Fool. Native Dancer in Native Dancer in 52 also as the TRA Horse of the Year.
Okay.
Yeah, just a couple.
You mentioned Champions, the DRF book. I mean, that just makes such wonderful reading. I mean, you can just leaf through that and just find more, just see more interesting things about this sport. When I was just before we were talking, I knew that I was going to make a reference to regret. So I looked up her record. I mean, she of course is the first filly and the only filly for a long time who won the Kentucky Derby, and she ran. Here was her career: the Saratoga Special, the Sanford, the Hopeful. She won them all against males. Her next start, the Kentucky Derby, 9 months later.
What with this performance, and I know that you've been asked this a million times. I think we've discussed it, where you've been asked about what the Belmont figure would have been, had the figs been codified at that point. I mean, what would be the range that
I went back some years ago and tried to apply our current methodology. My best estimate would be the upper 130s. I think it was, as a lot of people would surely suspect, the best single performance ever. Just the fact that he won by 31 lengths over horses with well-established form. It was monstrous, and you remember like Gallant Man's Belmont record of, I think it was 226 and 3/5, if I, off the top of my head, looked like an almost unassailable mark, and the secretary, you know, ran it in 224 flat. So I mean, I can't even begin to guess who might have, you know, run a better race.
Amazing. And as Andy references, you never know when, you know, when you come to Saratoga, you're going to see performances like this. I will use the opportunity, Andy, too, to mention a performance, in fact, that came out of nowhere, seemingly, Older Maidens and Express Man, part of a Viola Rapoli entry for Todd Pletcher, a 107 buyer, Andy, in the debut, kind of a McLean's Music-esque effort.
Right. You know, and he was supposed to be the weak part of the entry, which just goes to show that the you know, that even the insiders don't know everything. But that we are just, you know, we are just seeing more and more horses who show exceptional talent at the start of their careers, but they start them later, there haven't been many like blockbuster two-year-old performances, but you get like a horse like Flightline, who got off to a kind of a late start in his career. I mean, he's a monster, I suppose if he had been, you know, healthy and fit at two, he might have done something historic. But you know, an awful lot of horses, you know, just run that big figure early in their career when they're three-year-olds.
We'll see where this goes. And, you know, you and I, we checked in, what, about maybe a month ago and 6 weeks ago, and, you know, waiting now for Flightline in that Pacific Classic. We're going to see the Travers. We talked about Epicenter, who's now getting ready for this, what could be really a defining sophomore contest in this Travers, Andy, and then the Pennsylvania Derby. It really feels like everything we've got going is in place, particularly in the classic division, for a real quality assembly of talent with some style, you know, some style loggerheads.
Yeah, well, you know, when people are talking about the Travers, Epicenter always gets mentioned, but, you know, and I like him. I mean, he's had some, you know, had some difficult trips and defeat, but, you know, his figures, he's had plenty of chances to run a giant figure, and he hasn't done it. But meanwhile, the Pletcher horse, Charge It, I mean, just exploded out of nowhere, ran a figure of 111 at Belmont last month. I mean, he certainly deserves to be mentioned more prominently than he has been in the in the pre-Travers analysis. I mean, I don't know if he'll duplicate it, but nobody's been close to that.
We're going to see. There's people that are going to be running and lining up to be against either one of them, frankly, in the Classic, going the mile and a quarter versus the mile and the eighth distances. So we'll get the kind of confrontations that we so anticipate. It's not far off, really. We start to get to the shadow. And speaking of not far off, the shadow of the summer, but you're headed here, right? We're going to see you in the final week of the meet?
My plans are not totally finalized, but let's say I hope to be back doing the but had become a small tradition of doing the final Saturday of the meeting, talking horses with with little Andy. I mean, the way he's been handicapping lately. I mean, like for that day when he picked the last seven winners, he's been doing so well that I should probably just duck and avoid embarrassment. But I let's see, there's no card during the year that I spend more time on than the closing Saturday at Saratoga if I'm doing that show.
Well, it's always anticipated, and Andy looks forward to it as well. But it should be a tremendous closing Saturday, actually. We'll be waiting for that. We will see you at that point. And Andy, this was a lot of fun. I can tell by the reaction on Twitter. I put the win photo up, and I also put up James Quinn did the recap in the Troy Record.
Oh, really? Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll send you the link.
Okay, thanks.
I found it in newspapers.com. I went kind of looking. I was actually surprised how few write-ups. There was the AP's story, but when I saw Quinn's, I had to copy that one for people to read. And you can tell he was taken and impressed.
Right.
And rightly so. Andy Beyer, everybody. We'll see Andy up here closing week, and it's just always a treat. Everybody loves a visit from Andy. And you know who else we should check in with? Because it is the summer, and Sarah, it is Steve Crist while we're at it, actually. We can kind of bookend a little bit. We haven't checked in with Steve in ages. So I'm going to put that on the agenda. We're going to get Johnny in here. We got about 15. I've got about 15 or so, give or take, to check in with John because he's been golfing. He's been too busy for us. He's going to be here next week, actually, now that I'm thinking about it. He and Will they're coming up for their Travers visit, so we'll get a live. You know what? We're going to get. I'm going to confirm this now with this visit. We're going to get a live Johnny conversation, I bet, next Friday. Yeah, for the weekend preview. Winner. That'll be good. Jessica Paquette coming up as well, and Andy Serling. We'll check in with Popo, because I wanted Popo, he got an opportunity, now that everything with Form to Win is really pretty much buttoned down. There's been a lot of twists and turns, but it's there, and if you're on AmWager, you can utilize it as part of your, you know, interface. So Popo visit as well. And there you go. That should be good. Johnny, Jess, Andy, and Popo. All right. Second half, essentially, because we're past the bottom of the hour. All right. Let me pull out also get those PPs. That was fun that we had Al, and we were able to, you know, I was hoping to do it the day before with the conversation regarding the Philly, Caribbean caper. And in fact, you know what? That makes me want to. That makes me want to pull the. Take a look at something while we wait for Johnny. The fig. I'm curious of Spitestown, and because it's an opportunity for me to riff again, as I have, as you've heard me do a few times, about the way in which a horse, no, that's the 15th, the way a horse comes back from layoff and how they, you know, how, and this is a favorite. I mean, it's not like she's not going to go favored, right? But what's there's come on with the, there it is. But there are potentially situations where you are not going to necessarily have a short price, and a horse is going to be featured that is, you know, maybe just, you know, just one of the horses that's involved, and, you know, doesn't have a perfect 5-for-5 record. Caribbean Caper, here it is, and I'm sure that Jerry won't mind, but Spitestown, using Thoroughgraph as a number, Spitestown 3-year-olds, they average 11.5 is their index. That's their average performance as 3-year-olds. As 4-year-olds, they get 3 points faster, down to 8.5. So when you see a horse like Caribbean Caper, her last performance in that Dogwood last September, she ran a 2.75, essentially. Well, that means that in peak form, as a 4-year-old, she's probably capable of running essentially a 0 or even a negative number on Thoroughgraph. And on the buyer scale, right now, actually, you know what? Even on the buyer scale, you can see it. Her career best effort in that Dogwood was a 90. Now, if she got down to 0, if you equate the buyer scale with Jerry, with Thoroughgraph, that means a 0 is 100. So she's capable of a triple-digit buyer as a horse that's been away for 325 days, 10.5 months. She comes back a different horse. So people, sometimes you look in the PP. Johnny, come in on this conversation, because you know, we'll get Johnny's read. You know, Johnny, you've heard me riff on this a million times, that, you know, people look at past performances and they see a horse, oh, it's coming off a layoff, and oh, well, you know, maybe with a race will be competitive, you know, second off the layoff, but they're competitive off the layoff just because they're that much more mature, and they're a different horse at 4 than they were at 3, or a different horse at 5 than they were at 4.
Yeah, we talk about that plenty of times, and you see the improvement when you look at, it doesn't matter what speed figures look at, but certainly Thoroughgraph, it's very clear on the graph where you see when they're 2, they're able to run a certain level, and when they're 3, they run a little faster, and when they're 4, maybe a little faster, and then maybe ones that are later developing, you maybe don't see as much of a move between 2 and 3, but maybe then at 4 and 5, you see a little more development. It's something that occurs, and that handicappers have to be, you know, it's part of the handicapping game, is that we all know, we're all on an equal plane as far as knowing what happened in the last race, or the race before that, or the race before that. We can all see that. The question is today, and that's what we don't know. And so if you're projecting, or if you're, I guess, anticipating is a similar definition, what is the improvement liable to be? And first out off the layoff depends on the trainer, depends on what the horse has done in the past. Sometimes will give you a clue, but even that is different, because maybe off a layoff at 2, this is a different horse at 4. So it's that's why they have odds.
Exactly, and having, you know, having the ability to see. I mean, this is not an ideal circumstance, because Caribbean Caper is, you know, she's undefeated. I mean, how many times do you see an undefeated horse come back like this? And Al explained why. But I got to tell you, she was out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah, you forget, you know.
Yeah.
There's so much. The other thing that's always, that as Andy was talking about Secretariat, I was thinking to myself, and he may have touched on this, I didn't hear every minute of it, but I was thinking to myself about how we're talking about a horse that ran 50 years ago, and we're talking in, you know, whispers, because he was such a great and such a fantastic special animal. And I think to myself about when we watch young horses run, particularly two-year-olds, and you see a horse run an incredible, what appears to be on the surface as you're watching it, an incredible performance. He wins by 10. He wins by 6, 8 easily. He's up at the wire, and you look and you think, wow. Right away you think, is this one? Is this the next one? Is this the one? Because we're always searching, and the part of us, I think as fans, we actually want to see another one. You know, we certainly do. We want to see greatness. That's part of the reason we watch. And to think, look, 50 years have gone by. Have we seen greatness since then? Well, I can name some horses that I thought were certainly outstanding. I think American Pharoah was outstanding. Now, was he Secretariat? Well, you know, probably not. I mean, we probably haven't seen another Secretariat, which is why we speak about him in hushed terms. Why can't I think of his name? Baffert's horse that won the Travers by 10.
Well, Arrogate. I mean, the Arrogate. You know, he flashed across. You know, he was kind of a comet type.
Exactly. And was he as good as Secretary? I mean, you start to think in your mind. But when you see a two-year-old, or you know, you see a special performance, right away you want to say, this is the next one. Or like you mentioned, a three-year-old making his first start, runs a 107. I believe I have those corrected. Fletcher, first start, second half of the entry, of an entry. And you say to yourself, oh, look at this. Is this one? But, yeah, I think as time goes by, you always temper it. You temper your enthusiasm. By the way, I thought Affirmed was an outstanding horse. Was he Secretariat? No, probably not. But for me, he was very special. And you can name, each person can name these special horses and that they've seen. Zenyatta, if you want to throw her in, it's a special horse you've seen, even though some people would diminish her career because she raced in California and said, whatever. She was special, believe me. I don't care what, you can put a lot of asterisks there, but she's still special. And other ones, I'm leaving out so many that we've seen over the years. But still, Secretariat is like, you know, is like the standard that no one can get to. It's just, he just sits there, and 50 years later, we're looking at him still. And it's funny because you also have, whenever a trainer in a post-race interview or any kind of a discussion about his horse, his newest star, even mentions the S word at the end of that horse. That horse is done. He'll lose his next race. Don't ever, if you're ever comparing a horse to, don't use the S word. He was just that special. And 50 years later, we're still talking about him and we're discovering things, as you said, like, you know, kind of, you know, we probably knew this before. In fact, I probably knew it. I definitely knew it before, but I forgot it. Horse of the Year, too.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, come on. What would a horse have to do today to be Horse of the Year, too? Well, let's start. First of all, the older horses would have to be a down year. You'd have to have a week, or at least a well-balanced older group that were constantly beating each other. But then the three-year-old, you'd have to also have, I think, a kind of a balanced three-year-old year where nothing was clear before you got to a two-year-old champion. I mean, if he won his maiden, won an allowance race, won two stakes races, and the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, and was undefeated, unbeaten, unscored and untied upon. Unscored upon and untied. Would he be Horse of the Year? You know how hard that would be? I mean, a lot of things would have to happen, and yet this horse did it very strongly, I think, and proved that that was the correct assessment. So, yeah, what a special, special. Then I have to tell you, I did not ever see him run in person. And what was that, 73? What year was his three-year-old year?
73. 72 was the two-year-old year.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because when he won the Belmont, obviously everyone knew, and he went with that, the Triple Crown. And every year I go back, I still, to this day, before the Preakness, I go on the internet and watch that move that he made on that first turn in the Preakness. Just an unbelievable, incredible move that you don't see horses make. Normal. He did the unusual, and he did it often, and that's what made him special, because you don't see horses make that move and win, and certainly not in major races. First of all, no jockey would ever in his right mind make that kind of a move at Pimlico on the first turn. You'd be, you know, if you did lose, you'd be strung up on the way back in the jock's room. And then he follows that up with the Belmont. And so, okay, if you say to yourself, well, he caught a bunch of ties, and I've heard people say this, it was a small field in the Belmont, he caught a bunch of tired horses, and blah, blah, blah. But there's the clock, too. And
right, exactly. And that's right. That's exactly
right.
There
are other things involved. Yeah, when you add it all together. Look, you can, when you have the clock and nothing else, a horse can freak, and he can have his, and do things that he'll never do again, and he's never done before. And he'll never do again. You can have one of those days, just like we all can, no matter what we do. Some days just go like that when we're handicapping. Some days we can't miss. And those are special days. They don't happen often. But this horse did it again and again and again and again. And really, you know, when we look at greatness in any sport or any job or anything, any walk of life, We see flashes of greatness, moments, but the truly, the peak ones, the top of the hill, whether you want to talk about Secretariat, or you want to talk about Tiger Woods, or you want to talk about Wayne Gretzky, or you want to talk about Babe Ruth, they did it again and again and again, and they did things that were so special often, again and again and again. And that's where, you know, like we've talked about this before, the Hall of Fame, you say, well, does this guy deserve? We've got to the point where we're arguing about who deserves to be in the Hall. There should be another ring, like the Hall of Fame, for the ones who there was no discussion. There's no, like, we can't even talk about, oh, Muhammad Ali, let's throw him in there. They were just amazing, just, you know, again and again and again. And that's really. So 50 years later, we're still in awe of what Secretariat did, which is amazing, really.
And the only, you know, that performance, the only start of his career where he did not go favored, and that's part of the story as well. And, you know, while we were doing this, we should mention, you know, the two-year-old championship, of course, 50 years ago, but, and I looked behind him to see if there were many, there's only been one subsequently, of course, and that was Favorite Trick 25 years ago.
Yeah, and what was he like? What was he, 6 for 6 or 7 for 7? He won. He was unbeaten.
He was, let's see. He was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. He was 8 for 8.
8 for 8. Yeah, that's pretty good. Those are, again, different days. Like, we just talked about the scenario possible now, and the scenario I mentioned probably had one extra race in it. You probably go, I mean, if it happens today, you probably go maiden, stake, BC juvenile. Or maybe maiden, stake, BC juvenile. And then you're done. Maybe retired.
And I'm just looking here at recent, because I've got the most recent version of Champions in my lap, and to give you an idea of the kind of 2-year-olds that have been Champion. This actually was published most recently in 2015, but Nyquist and Songbird that year were the 2-year-olds. 2014, American Pharoah and Take Charge Brandy, and I will still maintain that. Chad's wonderful filly. For goodness sakes, Lady Eli. I still maintain that Lady Eli should have been the 2-year-old filly champ. Shared Belief and She's a Tiger, Shanghai Bobby and Beholder, Hanson and My Miss Aurelia, Uncle Mo and Awesome Feather. And to give you an idea of the champions, the overall champion those years, American Pharoah, California Chrome, Wise Dan, Havre de Grace, and Zenyatta. You had very, very nice 2-year-olds that had, very nice seasons, but then going back another 10 years, there really was really nobody that you would elevate. Street Sense in 2006, but Invasor was the overall champion. Vindication, but there was Azari that year. Johannesburg, but there was Point Given in 2001. Yeah, I mean, to be a 2-year-old, to be the horse of the year as a 2-year-old is just ridiculous. It just doesn't.
Yeah.
It's a rare feat.
And again, I said, like those other divisions, maybe had slow years. Maybe not. Because the other thing is, when you are secretariat and you sit that, Big Red, he was that big, massive individual, he was impressive. And his races were impressive and his times were impressive. And people who know the game, they know when they see a 2-year-old. Many times the public, the media, can get excited over the flavor of the month.
Yeah.
This happens. This horse wins by 6 or 7 in fast time, and we say, look at this one, look at this. But to do it again and again, people who know, They see a horse run, and I've been around racing long enough to people I respect, when they say to you, "Wow, this one can really run," in like hushed tones, it's different. It's a different performance, and because of the way the horse moves, because of the look of the horse, and I think with Secretariat, I think that was part of the case also. Because he was so, he looked the part and acted the part.
With good reason.
Dominant.
Good reason.
Dominant.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Johnny, just a minute or two, actually, to the top of the hour, and I got to get Jessica Paquette in to look at these stakes at Colonial, but
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
You're not going to rush me out of the way for Jessica Paquette. Jessica was one of the original Kids to the Cup girls.
Yes, she was.
Original. She was on the original trip. I love Jessica. I'll step aside for Jessica anytime.
Well, I was leading to the conclusion, and I realized out loud that with Travers Week ahead, you'll be here next week.
Next week is Travers Week?
Yeah.
What happened to my summer?
What happened to everybody's summer?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, really. really. It's going to be something. Our man Will Schwartz has one in Friday. And we'll certainly leader of the band is in Friday, so we'll be rooting for her. And I was thinking of making the trip up Friday, but I have an engagement Saturday that I have to get to, so it would be an up and back. And Will and I were talking, he's coming up for the weekend, and we were talking. I said, it's a long drive, but if I do this and I do that and I do that, blah, blah, blah. He said, you know, the race is on TV. I said, oh, okay. So maybe we'll wait for next week instead.
Well, we will. We'll have you live,
I hope.
Yeah. Hope so too. That's one of my favorite. It's one of my favorite visits of the year. Is when you guys come up.
We always manage to touch base, don't we?
Yeah, of course. And there's certain rituals that Johnny and Will have, including getting a pizza at the pizza truck.
Yeah, I love
that's
those.
One of your that's one of part of your ritual. Yeah.
You turned me on a couple of years now. You know, COVID kind of interrupted everything.
Yeah, it did.
The one year we didn't even get to the track. The track was
right.
No people, and we stayed at the Prime.
Yeah,
we had a golf course. We stayed at Prime and watched the races there all day. So thankfully, we're back at the track, and we're excited to see that again. But at the track, you had turned us on to an ice cream sandwich.
You're out of luck.
I, they're gone, right? They're not there anymore.
Well, they're not there this year. You're talking about Martha's, and Martha's Dandy Cream has got these thick, outstanding ice cream sandwiches. You can get the chocolate mint one at Stewart's. Stewart's is distributing four Martha's. So if you do want one and chocolate mint is in your wheelhouse, you can at least get one. Otherwise, I'll have to run you guys up to Queensbury.
Well, I don't know what Queensbury is, and I don't know if I'm going to travel for that. But it was very good the day he pushed me on it. I enjoyed it a lot.
too funny.
I'm looking forward to the trip so much, and Will's son, Drew, is going to join us this year.
Oh, cool.
It's kind of a, you know, he joined us back in the years when he was young, and he had the Madden game, and he's in the back seat play of the car playing the original Madden whenever that came out, and now he's a grown young man working, and now he's joining us again. So we're looking forward to having him along.
Johnny D, everybody, XB Johnny D. You'll see him around the track next week, and he'll sit in on Friday on the weekend preview live from the racetrack. Johnny, I appreciate it, and we will talk literally next week in person. Johnny D. Let's take a break, our last of the morning, and when we come back, I'm going to check in with Jessica Paquette, Andy Serling, Pompo Morales, a full hour ahead at the races. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the foaling barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.